Before I start today, I want to acknowledge that sometimes I kind of fade off when I'm speaking. So if at some point you can't hear me, please feel free to put your hand up to your ear and let me know. I would appreciate the reminder. I will try to remember to keep my voice so that you can hear me. As I mentioned in May, there's a UUA task force that's currently working to revisit the UUA's seven principles. Those are the principles we read today at the beginning of the service, and they're intended as guides for us as Unitarian Universalists. It's likely the task force will recommend that these original seven principles remain more or less as they are now. It's also likely they'll recommend that we adopt one or more additional principles. Given that context and the fact that we'll be called upon to respond to the task force recommendations, it seems that now is a good time for us to reflect on what the seven principles mean for us. In May, we started that review and considered the first principle, which states that as Unitarian Universalists, we commit to affirming and promoting the inherent worth and dignity of each person. Today, we consider the second principle, which asserts that we commit to affirming and promoting justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Bill, it's ringing just a little bit on the sound, so maybe we can. The second principle is an obvious outgrowth of the first, since the inherent worth of each person suggests that each of us deserves to be treated with justice, equity, and compassion in our relations with one another. What makes the second principle more challenging, at least for me, is its context and its scope. As an individual, I can seek to recognize and honor the worth and dignity of each person with whom I interact. It can be challenging to do so, especially when I'm tired or frustrated or angry, or when I strongly disagree with another's words or actions, but I can at least imagine that it might be possible for me to do it. I can make an effort. By contrast, the second principle speaks about relationships. Relationships necessarily involve other people, so promoting justice, equity, and compassion in human relations requires that I work not only with myself, but encourage and engage others to foster healthy and respectful relationships. I don't know about you, but I've found that getting everyone to work together is hard, and getting us to work together to resolve injustices of the scale and complexity we face is indeed daunting. It's hard to know where to even start. For me, the task is overwhelming, almost to the point of paralysis. And I'll confess that I got this far, you know, yesterday, sometime early in the morning, Carol will tell you, with my writing, and then I didn't know what to say. Okay, now what? You know, so didn't have anywhere to go. So I thought about all kinds of things I might talk about. You know, if we really want to promote a more just and equitable society, for example, if we really want to promote a more just and equitable society, then we're going to have to change the way we fund our schools, since the existing method systematically privileges the children of wealth who are already privileged in so many other ways. It's inherently inequitable. We're also going to need to raise the wages of most people and create a more progressive tax system that more equitably distributes the rewards generated by this country's economic engine in recognition of the fact that the country's wealth is created by the efforts of the many and not just the privileged few. We are going to need to figure out how to make adequate health care the right of every citizen. And that's just the beginning. But I suspect if I were to speak about any of those topics, the few minutes that I will have today won't even begin to move the needle. You either already agree with me, and so change is unlikely, or we don't have enough time, and this isn't the right venue for us to discuss in a way that would be required for either of us to really shift our positions. So after struggling with that for a good long while, I decided instead I'll talk about what I'm doing in my own life to try and affirm and promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. First, I try to remember that life isn't always fair. Life's rewards don't always go to the most deserving. Acts of injustice and inequity are more common than I would like to believe. In particular, it's undoubtedly true that I've had an easier time negotiating life than some others because of my race, my gender, my education, my financial resources. It can be hard for me to pinpoint instances where I've been advantaged. Privilege is often invisible to the privileged. But I have witnessed enough moments when it was clear that someone else was either privileged or disadvantaged because of their gender, race, education, or social status, that I have to believe that I've been the beneficiary of similar moments. I've worked hard for the rewards I've received, and it can feel like accepting that privilege might have been a factor seems to negate the reality of my hard work, my own efforts and sacrifices. It seems like maybe I don't deserve what I have. It's hard. It's taken me time to understand that being privileged does not necessarily negate my accomplishments, but instead reflects the fact that those of a different race or gender may have worked just as hard or harder than I have. They may have been just as talented or skilled, but they have not received the same rewards. Understanding and addressing white privilege, that's my privilege, one of them, is not about tearing down those with privilege, but lifting up those who have historically been disadvantaged. This certainly was not something that was easy for me to see, for me to believe, or to accept. I was confused about the concept of privilege and what it means for a number of years. I credit a reading group in which we sought to see the implications of difference on power and privilege in our lives with helping me develop a visceral understanding of privilege and its workings. This leads me to my second ongoing effort. If I want to live up to our second principle, it's really essential that I continue to invest time and effort to understand myself and my own life, as well as the lives of those who are different from me. I need to learn to recognize and question the assumptions that guide me, ferret out their implications, and refine my understanding of our world and its workings. For example, I no longer choose to believe that we live in a meritocracy, or at least not a pure meritocracy, where hard work and skill alone can allow anyone who tries to prosper. Among other things, the myth of meritocracy makes it all too easy to blame the poor for their condition, assuming that their plight must be the result of their lack of effort, and absolving ourselves and our social structures of any responsibility for their circumstances. As I have learned about those experiences, about the experiences of others, the workings of our society, and reflected on my own life experience, it is becoming abundantly clear that hard work is not nearly enough to raise oneself out of poverty if one is not also privileged in some way, or at the very least, extraordinarily lucky. And I know there's much more for me to learn about how the world is not quite what I think or hope it is. And I try to welcome opportunities to dig deeper and learn more. In saying that, I also want to acknowledge that digging deeper can be profoundly uncomfortable. It has been hard for me to recognize moments when I have unintentionally marginalized or harmed some person or group because of their difference and my own naivete and lack of understanding. It has been a blow to my ego to discover that I have achieved something not solely because of my merit, but at least in part because of the advantage afforded by my race, gender, or some other marker of privilege. And just last week, I visited the West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville, West Virginia, which is now closed, but which underscored the brutality that existed and likely still exists in our legal system. And I will not call it our justice system. There was little that I saw or learned there that suggested there was anything about that place that was about justice. It was deeply disturbing. These moments can be hard, but it's such realizations that help me see and be ready to challenge injustice and inequities. I also want to note here that our second principle calls for us to promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. and I've been speaking exclusively about justice and equity. Learning to recognize and name injustice and equity is critical to promoting healthy relationships, but without compassion, I doubt that much of value will be accomplished. And by compassion, I mean the act of holding something, embracing it, embracing ourselves, another person, our experience, in a loving, clear-seeing, non-judgmental way. To effectively promote justice and equity, we need such compassion. We need to see clearly and non-judgmentally and with love. We first need to find compassion for ourselves. We need to hold ourselves in love, recognizing our limitations and failings without judgment or excuse, and love ourselves still. The alternatives to practicing self-compassion are damaging. For example, if I'm unable to be compassionate or self-compassionate, and I want to protect myself from discomfort, the simple thing to do would be to refuse to see the racism and prejudices around me and my own part in perpetuating them, which would only multiply the harm. Another alternative would be to recognize those, and instead of holding myself with compassion, to wallow in my guilt and self-loathing, or use it as a goad to get myself and others to battle injustice as atonement for my sin. Although action driven by guilt might drive some momentary gains, I cannot believe that such action will lead to lasting change. Self-loathing is hard for anyone to tolerate for long, and it inevitably turns outward. Misery does not like to be alone, and it breeds more misery. Self-loathing turned outward causes yet more injustice. Self-compassion, by which I mean seeing ourselves clearly, both our gifts and our limitations, and holding ourselves in loving acceptance, is essential to provide us the courage and the stamina to address injustice. Learning to see others clearly and to hold all of them, their gifts and their limitations, in love can provide us motivation to act. Holding others with compassion is really the work of the first principle emerging again. By learning to see and appreciate the experience of others, recognizing their inherent worth and dignity, I begin to understand their joys and sorrows. I also begin to see how my action or inaction contributes to both their joys and their sorrows. When I hold them in love, I am drawn to change my behavior and encourage others to change theirs so that all of us can experience a more just and equitable world. Ultimately, it is love that calls us to act. It is love that sees and values the inherent worth and dignity of each of us, of ourselves and of others. Cultivating compassion is essential to the work of the second principle. As we go out into the world, may it be love that motivates us and compassion for ourselves and others that informs our acts. Blessed be, and amen. Alan, now